Hello and welcome to All Tomorrow's Festivals, the content series that goes behind the scenes a bit on our research process as we try and explore how the Edinburgh Festivals this August can show us signals of what's about to come to the rest of the world of entertainment and culture over the next few years. This episode, we speak to Ryan Stewart. So Ryan's show is called Kinder. It is on at 6:40 in the Big Belly at the Underbelly in Cowgate, so right in the heart of Edinburgh for those of you who will be here this August. I am Nick Sherrod, MD of Label Sessions and a slightly reluctant futurist. I'm also joined by Josh Nixon, our content producer. Josh, hello.
Hello there.
Good. So this was interesting. So the first person we've had on this content series from Australia, I think. So maybe the furthest distance to come to Edinburgh. And it was someone coming or bringing a show for the first time, kind of very enthusiastic about the potential of being here in Edinburgh in August. And another kind of really interesting show that was dealing with some very big topics personally and kind of in the kind of political ether just now, but again doing it through comedy.
Yeah, and it sounded, as you'll hear in the interview, like a really big shop for them. So they've had a lot of success bringing it through the Adelaide Fringe, similar to another guest we had previously, Aaron. But they were talking about how it's, you know, such a big shot for them to come from Australia all the way to Edinburgh, obviously it being a world-renowned festival. And again, you'll hear a little bit about their sort of personal turmoil, about a professional relationship that sort of came to be and sort of fizzled out. But this has risen from the ashes of that, which I find very fascinating, very motivating for one.
Yeah. Interesting. So like you say, so Aaron was coming to the festival for the first time, again, with a very personal show that had been in development for a while, but doing it from the States. Ryan doing it from Australia. One of the things that's maybe, interesting when you hear that story compared to when you hear the story of artists from Scotland or from the UK is there's a real sense of kind of cohort or like, you know, fellow feeling between the different companies and the different artists bringing shows over at the same time when you're doing that from somewhere as far afield as America or Australia or even elsewhere in Europe, and quite often in the European case some kind of government support for that activity, whereas actually those from the UK have much less of a sense of that. I think mm-hmm. There was a real sense, I think, in Ryan's interview that they were kind of collaborative, and also I guess also in the economics, you know, Ryan's also directing other shows as well, so it's an interesting different experience compared to some of the artists here.
Yeah, it sounds like a real melting pot for sure.
Yeah, so let's head in. So Ryan's show is quite an interesting thing. So it all starts, in according to the blurb, as an unexpected call from a library that derails a performance planned by the newly arrived drag artist Goody Prostrate. From that point, there's quite a few twists and turns, which actually Ryan gives us a bit of a inside track to. So let's head in and hear Ryan describe their show for the Fringe Festival 2025. First question, Ryan, is like, what can audiences expect when they come to your show this year?
Oh, good question. When audiences come and see Kinder, I think they're going to be in for a little bit of an unexpected wild ride. We start the show in one place and very quickly turn that on its head within the first 2 minutes, I would say. 2 to 3 minutes of the show. It is completely different to what people think it is going to be going in. That sounds very cryptic, and I know that sounds very cryptic, and it sounds very marketing lingo for come and see my show and just find out for yourself. Look, to give you a little bit of a very brief rundown, we follow the story of Goody Prostrate, local drag queen who's just moved into a new city and has invited the audience in for a final rehearsal of what they are going to be performing that night at the first gig that they have booked in for this new city. Kind of fitting as an Australian coming into Edinburgh. But very quickly, that is sort of flipped on its head when Goody realizes that the gig that they've been booked for is something completely different to what they thought it was going to be. And from there, they experience a little bit of a, the audience, sorry, experience a little bit of a downward spiral as Goody tries to very quickly pivot and figure out what they're going to perform for this new audience that they weren't expecting to be performing in front of that evening.
Okay, really interesting. And do you have a sense as to like why you think this is, well, how come you brought the show now? Do you think it's an important thing right now? Is now the right moment for it? Is it just the way it kind of came into your head?
Yeah, so I think it's sort of very suited to what is going on politically at the moment, particularly in regards to the sort of, for lack of a better term, moral panic that we're seeing sort of emerge around drag artists in particular. Mm-hmm. But also queerness in general, and this idea of exposing children, quote unquote, exposing children to this idea of queerness or gender ideology. I think we're seeing at the moment a massive sort of attack on the trans community in particular, and, you know, drag artists by as an extension of this idea of, you know, disrupting gender norms and that kind of thing, have also faced a very similar sort of attack through, you know, the sorts of bans that we're seeing on stuff like Storytime Reading Hours, which is kind of this show is sort of centered on, this misconstruing of what a reading hour is for a drag artist as opposed to a child. And so I think a lot of how the show first came about when we first started developing it about 12 months ago now was sort of responding to that real world increase in that sort of rhetoric we're seeing, especially with stuff that's coming out of the US, but also, you know, the UK, Australia. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So quite a kind of... it's responding to something that's going on in the world. How come you decided to sort of bring it not quite halfway around the world, probably the whole way around the world to Edinburgh in August? Is there a reason why that choice was in your mind?
Look, Edinburgh has always been a dream for me and my team to get to. I've been working in theatre now for the past decade or so. And I've been to Edinburgh before as a city, absolutely love it, but I've never been able to experience it in fringe mode before. There was a time just before COVID kicked off where we were planning to tour some shows over to the UK. We're going to go to Brighton Fringe Festival, Edinburgh Fringe, and that kind of thing. But obviously, a cheeky little global pandemic stopped us in our tracks there. But yeah, when I first started developing this show last year after a pretty terrible 12 months personally, I went through a really bad sort of professional breakup with a collaborator who turned out to be a bit of a, what words can I use there? We'll just say a difficult person. My agent dissolved their entire agency. So I was back into the world of freelancing again. And for a while I was like, do I even bother continuing with this whole theater thing? Like, what am I doing this for? And kind of swung right back in the other direction. And I was like, let's just write a show. Fuck it. Let's just do something. Let's see if it has any legs. And yeah, I was kind of looking at what was going on in the world at the moment, looking back on my last sort of 10 years working in the theatre industry as an adult and being like, theatre was my dream as a child. So looking at that, looking at my own childhood, and then also looking at, you know, the prospect of the future in this industry and being like, all right, let's give it a go. So we put it on at Melbourne Fringe last year. So that was October last year. And that was just sort of a bit of a test to see if the show had any legs. And as it turns out, it does. We snapped up a couple of awards. We got some great reviews. And so for the Australian Fringe context, the sort of next step from wherever you're sort of presenting in your own hometown is kind of like Adelaide Fringe. I guess for Australians, Adelaide Fringe is kind of like our equivalent of Edinburgh Fringe. That said, it is about half the size of the programming, we're in Australia, so you don't get quite as many sort of diverse acts as you would coming and congregating in Edinburgh. But that next step for us to test the show was Adelaide Fringe this year. So that was back in March. And the exciting thing about Adelaide is that there's a bunch of Edinburgh representatives that come out and see a bunch of shows as well. So we were meeting with them while we were there. And I'm also a producer. So I was also bringing a show over to Edinburgh this year as a producer with a different work. And we got a really good response in Adelaide, basically, especially with some of the Edinburgh representatives that came. And we were offered a couple of programming slots. And, you know, because we were already intending to come over with the show that I'm currently producing, I was like, all right, again, fuck it, let's go. You know, this is an opportunity that I've been sort of dreaming about for a long time, and the opportunity is presenting itself now, so might as well take it. Why Edinburgh? It's the biggest independent theatre. It's the biggest independent arts sort of festival in the world, but for theatre makers and for live performers, it's the sort of best platform to get your work out there and get it spoken by people who you would not have the opportunity to speak with, especially in Australia, especially how, you know, geographically isolated we are. You don't really get the opportunity that often to be able to meet people from all over the world who could potentially program your work and that kind of thing. So, very long story short, that is why we went to Edinburgh.
Is this a kind of show where the show that we see in Edinburgh in August is kind of the thing that was always in your head at the start? Or as it's gone through that whole kind of year of development and being in front of audiences for the first time, has it changed a lot, or is it kind of pretty much what was there in your head at the start?
I think the version of the show that we're bringing to Edinburgh is the version of the show that I had in my head all along, but it took us a couple of seasons to get there. About over a year ago, I took myself on a little holiday to start writing the show. And I came out of that holiday with like a 50-page script. And for a one-person show, 50 pages is just ridiculous. Like, we were going to be there for over 2 hours, and that's not even counting like an interval or anything like that. So it was just the process of just like stripping back all of the stuff, all of the exposition, all of the memories and stories that I decided to just cram into this Google Doc that I'd been working on. Melbourne Fringe last year was sort of where we were testing like the structure and the form, and also testing this character. This character is this drag character has been developed specifically for the show. I've never done drag before. I've always sort of been on the periphery. I have a lot of artist friends who are in the drag community and that sort of stuff. But I was really interested in exploring drag through this character as a theatrical convention rather than, you know, like a performer in a club or something like that, or, you know, a performer who goes and does actual drag story time reading hours. So the process of sort of developing the first iteration of the show for Melbourne Fringe was literally just testing what people respond to and sort of what works on stage and what doesn't. Adelaide Fringe was a bit of a process of refinement. We were very fortunate enough to get sort of a summer residency at a theatre company here in Melbourne and develop the show again. We were also in a sort of different type of venue, so we had to change the show for it to sort of suit a traditional end on theatre sort of vibe. And then when we found out that we had been given a bunch of Edinburgh offers and were going to be taking the show overseas to quite possibly the largest independent arts platform in the world, we were like, okay, we need to make this literally the most perfect version of this show that we've been trying to sort of develop over the last 12 months. So we went back into development, and I actually literally about couple of hours before we started having this chat, printed off the final script to start.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Something like that. So hot off the press, 1 month out from Edinburgh Fringe, the script is finalized and we're in the full stage now, no longer developing.
Brilliant. And there's a couple of things I wanted to ask, because I'm sorry to hear that there was such a professional sort of turmoil of having that real problem there between you and a collaborator. Did that sort of trigger like a fight or flight response? I know you said like, fuck it, we're just going to throw it into the wind. And then from there, did you sort of always conceive it as a one person show, or did you sort of have a bigger scope for it, or has it just always been this sort of vulnerable position?
That's a great question. I had never sort of considered the idea. Well, I never considered that something that I could create would have the sort of, I guess, gravitas to be able to be sustained by one performer. But something that fortunately, I guess, did come out of this creative collaboration that has since fallen apart is that I did my very first one-person show with this collaborator. They brought me on to perform a pre-existing one-person show script. And the experience of doing that kind of made me realize, oh, this is something that I can do. You know, I'm very used to being in shows where, you know, you're bouncing off another actor on stage, or there's, you know, it's dialogue. It's two people talking, three people talking, whatever. But when it's you solo on stage, basically monologuing, it's a completely different vibe. And so I guess the experience of doing that one person show of someone else's script, and also sort of, you know, losing the support of that collaborator, losing the support of my agent at the time, I was kind of like, I don't really feel like I have many other people to help me, I guess. I've got friends and family, of course, but I mean, creatively, and in the industry, it was sort of looking like, all right, I think I'm going to have to go this alone for a little bit. And so that's sort of, I guess, how the idea of it being a one-person show emerged. It was, you know, I didn't have to think about trying to coordinate with other actors of our availability. You know, at the moment, I've obviously now got an incredible team around me. I've got designers, I've got my director and stuff like that. But there are days when I'm doing rehearsals just by myself, because I'm able to do that, and I'm able to sustain that by myself, which is exciting. But also at times can be a little bit isolating, because you're sort of like, particularly me and my director have had this thing sometimes where we'll be really in the zone, we'll be in sort of like flow and just like bouncing off each other, and then we'll get to the end of the day and we'll be like, wait, is this going to be funny to anyone else? Or is this just like two friends yapping and bantering and then being like, ha ha, we are so funny? But then, you know, you'll scroll through Instagram and stuff like that, and you'll see, I'm not saying anything about you guys, but you'll see, you know, dude bros doing a podcast, and they'll just be like, yeah man, back and forth, and I'm like, oh yeah, I think I do have something to say.
That's really nice. I mean, do you find, though, there must be some tension sometimes between the different hats that you're wearing, so to speak, because you're doing a show that has this whole kind of flipping the audience, what their audience is expecting, but you're also kind of involved in promoting it and stuff as well. That's a tension, right? There must be a tension at some level.
Yeah, my director is constantly reminding me. She's like, okay, Ryan, we're in the room now. We're about to rehearse. You're going to have to take off your producer hat. You're going to have to take off your because I also do like a lot of sourcing my own props and set pieces and stuff like that. She's like, take off your logistical hat, put on your creative hat. And then every now and then we'll have a 5-minute break and I might pull out my phone and start reading an email or something. She's like, Ryan, what are you doing? Yeah. Show me the screen. Put it away. Yeah. There is a lot of tension there sometimes. There are also, you know, as a producer, you're often considering ways to enable creative stuff to happen. So when I am in a creative state and I'm like, ooh, I would love to do this or add this to the show, my producer brain will sometimes kick in and be like, but wait, how are you actually going to logistically do that? And so it has sort of limited stuff sometimes, but it has also kept it pretty realistic, because the reality is that I have to fly 16,000 kilometers overseas. And so having that producer brain while I'm also trying to do the creative stuff has its benefits as well, to kind of realistically pull me back down to earth and be like, what can you actually manage to do when you're on tour in another country? But that said, there is always tension there, and it's a lot of push-pull going on in between these 2 years.
And I'm interested now, so you're thinking about coming over, because, I mean, it's a big deal for companies in Scotland to think about bringing a show to Edinburgh in August. You're also doing it with this massive gulf of miles in between times and things. Do you have a sense that you're kind of landing with a kind of like agenda in mind of things you want to happen in August? You're just going to like sort of experience it for a few weeks? Like, what's your kind of approach to that, or kind of mindset around that?
Yeah, good question. I think a lot of people who have sort of been giving me advice in advance of arriving in Edinburgh is to sort of be clear about what you're going there to achieve. Because if you're going there to achieve ticket sales, great, focus on that. Focus on marketing the hell out of it, all that sort of stuff. If you're focusing on, you know, professional development opportunities or potential touring opportunities in the future, go in with that mindset, and that way that you can spend the energy that you have outside of doing the show, networking and stuff like that. For me, I think it's that latter goal of going there to network and to sort of get bums on seats of people who I potentially may want to work with in the future, or present the show in their theaters and stuff like that. But you've only got 24 hours in a day. And even in Edinburgh, like, I keep consistently being told, be very clear on your scope, your vision, and what you want to get out of the festival. And for me, it's definitely about creating like future opportunities, because I'm not going to be able to fly, like, realistically, I'm not going to be able to fly to Edinburgh every year. It's a massive, you know, financial and economic investment, as well as just energy and sort of the mental thing of getting, you know, in a new time zone and all that sort of stuff. I absolutely blabbed, and I don't recall what your original question was there, but I think
I was thinking about how you're approaching the whole thing. It's always like one of the strongest contingents, I think, the Australian shows that come over. It's like there's something in the water, both in terms of, you know, the quality of the work, but also the kind of hustle, or like the kind of ability to just make it all happen. There's something, I think, in the Australian community is really strong at.
I feel like because it is such a, like, a physical and economic investment to get over there, and even to, you know, amidst all of the applications that all of the venues are getting for all of the shows, you know, I saw today that, like, Rosie O'Donnell, I'm pretty sure, is doing a show. How am I, little Ryan Stewart in Melbourne, meant to compete against an application being submitted by, like, Rosie O'Donnell and these kinds of, like, big players in the game? So I think when we do get that opportunity and we do get programmed in, like, an incredible venue or something like that, we want to bring something polished and something really, you know, that's going to stand out. We can use, you know, I can use Melbourne Fringe, I can use Adelaide Fringe, I can use all the fringes that we have in the capital cities here to test out my work and see what works and what doesn't. But when we're talking about that investment of, like, flying as far as you have to be able to participate in Edinburgh, you want to bring something that's worth other people seeing, and not just that you're just going to test out for a little bit just to see, we'll just see how it flies in another country. I mean, maybe for some people that's the case, but for moi and the people that are coming over with me and stuff like that, this is kind of our, not the be all and end all, but
it's a big deal. Let's just talk about the world slightly. So, like, in terms of, as an artist right now, are there things that you are excited about when you look around? Do you think that, before we'll do the positive side first of all, are there things that you think are creatively interesting or just exciting right now?
Yeah, I think we are experiencing a period of sort of creative generation that we haven't really seen before. The access to be able to put on your own work and stuff like that that has been enabled by social media, and just like the reduction in in barriers to accessing festivals and stuff like that is really exciting. It means that we're hearing stories that we wouldn't ordinarily hear, and all sorts of people are going to be able to tell new stories. I feel like previously arts and particularly theatre and the performing arts have been a little bit like elitist, and there's a lot of sort of gatekeepers there. But a lot of the technologies, festivals, all the stuff that's kind of happening at the moment is increasing the amount of people who have the ability to get access points into the industry, I guess. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is that there's, I think, like we said before, there's a lot of shit out there. But the good thing is that it's not the same stories that are being regurgitated over and over. I think that's definitely the case with, like, you know, theatre companies that constantly put on the classic canon and stuff like that. You're like, we've heard this story before. I don't need to see another version of Chekhov that's now set in the 70s where, you know, all the actors are wearing, yeah.
Yeah, that is the thing I've never understood at Edinburgh in August. There's always amazing stuff in the world. And the number of, like, university companies that bring, like, a version of a play from 50 years ago, and you're kind of like, I don't know what you're expecting to get from this. I mean, I hope you have a good time. But, like, it's just like, you know, it's like, this is a hard environment for you to do Chekhov to two people on a 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. Like, this is like... I'm going to come in and behave thing. And then, so, okay, so we talked about that's a really interesting thing, I think, to be excited about in terms of the opening up of opportunities for people to be creative on stage. Are there things you think are kind of threatening to the scene just now, or a bit scary, or that we need to be aware of as kind of challenges to the scene right now?
Yes, I feel like I have more to say on that than the exciting parts. but look, the it's the same old story. It's always going to be about funding. Like, funding just keeps getting whittled away. The interesting thing about the performing arts, gosh, my degree is getting away from me now, but it's something that we studied in uni, is that the cost of putting on a show is never going to really, you're never really going to see that returned in profits. There always needs to be sort of some external, if you're going to significantly turn a profit and be able to pay everyone a living wage that is not just something that's a bit of a token, there always needs to be some sort of external force that's contributing to that. The UK is very similar to Australia in that we have arts councils that do provide that sort of funding, or the idea is to provide that funding, but that's slowly being whittled away. So what the alternative to that is either commercial interests, so sponsorship and that kind of stuff, or philanthropy. And both of those options, you're often quite beholden to whatever the sort of agenda of that person or company sponsoring you is. So I feel like moving into sort of that private funding space is a little bit of a red flag for me. Another one is obviously AI. Maybe less so for live performance artists and stuff like that. And I'm going to be upfront here. AI has some incredible capabilities, and when we figure out how to utilize it in the best ways, I think it's going to be really exciting. But at the moment, the sort of speed with which it is developing, I feel like is getting out of our hands a little bit and out of our ability to wrangle it back. And I think that is going to have some implications down the line. Mm-hmm. And also just the general sort of swing towards conservatism that we're experiencing. If you take those two previous things I've spoken about, like AI and private funding for the arts, and then sort of place that within a world where it feels like we're creeping back towards a largely conservative, like, idea of how to do things.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly inspire confidence in me as to, you know, what future governments and how they're going to approach arts funding is going to be, or the sorts of private backers of arts that might emerge from that kind of thing. That little bit doom and gloom. So,
I think this is it. Because I guess the intention here is, hey, is really exciting the way people can we can now profile or see the work of more diverse makers. But there's also this trend, perhaps, where some of the direction of travel would be kind of more diverse makers, as long as there's a rich person who like wants it to be on stage, or there's somebody there's some kind of the money can be a gatekeeper if the technology removes some of them.
100%, yeah. And when you're, you know, if you're someone who is in a position to be able to give money, unless you're an incredibly charitable person, there's often some sort of personal gain that you want from that as well, whether it's going to be, you know, having a hand in the creative side of it, or being like, I actually don't quite like what you're saying there. Can you edit this for me? Then becomes a form of censorship. And even if it's just at that level of, you know, in the rehearsal room, it's a form of censorship.
Yeah. Just a quick follow-up to that. Live performance is an idea. We haven't talked about that yet, because I guess this this some of the points you're making, if you like, you could have written a book. You could have created a kind of AI world or something, right? Is there something about live performance that you think is either especially relevant to the story you want to tell or important?
Yeah, very good question. This sort of often pops up when people sort of ask me, what sort of acting do you like to do? And I know what they mean by that is, do you prefer screen or do you prefer stage? And I always say I prefer stage because, one, if I'm on a stage and I say something, I've said it. I can't take it back. I can't edit it out. I can't ask the audience to forget that I've just said. I've said it. Uh-huh. They know it happened. We know it happened. We have to move on from there. We have to figure out a way out. The other thing I feel that I love about the stage and the sort of exchange between an audience member and me as a performer, or even when I'm an audience member and seeing a performer, is that you suspend your disbelief when you go and see theater or live performance. You know, that's why we believe that, you know, in when we go and see The Tempest, for example, that there's some little malicious sprite out there who's causing havoc in the world. We suspend our disbelief. But every now and then, either as a performer or an audience member, I'll drop into the reality of the fact that we're in a darkened room, you're sitting in silence, and I'm doing something and you're listening to it. And I don't know what, but there's just something magic about them. There's just something that it can't be captured by the experience of seeing someone perform through a screen or something like that. I feel like it's honestly the same experience that people have with, you know, seeing their favorite artists at a concert, or even people going to see a football game and being able to see like your favorite player. I don't know, sports fans, but you know, seeing your favorite player like score a goal right in front of you. There's something palpable about that exchange that you can't get through, you know, the separation of a screen or something like that.
Yeah, that's really good. So I was just looking at the time. So you are 6:40 in the Big Belly at the Underbelly Cowgate, the original Underbelly. Are there other shows that you're excited to see? Like, I don't know if you already know things, you've maybe been looking at seeing some of the things that are coming over. Is there anything that kind of strikes your attention?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually a bunch of Australian creatives I know going over as well with some of their international fringe debuts as well, and we've sort of been following each other along the fringe circuit here in Australia. But the interesting thing about the Australian circuit is, unlike Edinburgh, which kind of feels like an almost, you know, 24-hour festival, like you can wake up at 9 a.m. and go and see a bunch of shows, and if you had the energy all the way through to, like, you know, 3 a.m. in Australia, it starts at about 4 or 5 p.m. aside from maybe, you know, some shows that are more catered towards children and families that are earlier in the day. But so I've been, you know, following along the circuit with a couple of friends, and our shows are always overlapping. I've never been able to see their show because I'm at 9 p.m. and they're at 7:30, and I've got to get into a full face of makeup before.
Yeah.
Or they're just after me and I'm still in a face of makeup and I got to go and scrub it off because I'm sweating it off. All that's to say, I'm finally going to be able to see their shows in Edinburgh because of how much of a, you know, spread of a schedule there is. One show that I am very, very excited to see is a show called Shitbag, which is basically being marketed as Fleabag, but more queer and more shit. Literally, it's about the artist. Haley's experience of living with Crohn's disease. So Fleabag with Crohn's disease, that's going to be at Summer Hall. Another show that I'm very keen to see at Summer Hall is Nusha, which is by another emerging playwright performer here in Australia, Beth Patterson. And that story is about her relationship with her grandmother, who was a Holocaust survivor. We shared a venue back in Adelaide Fringe. And whilst, you know, the story of a woman's relationship with her grandmother, a Holocaust survivor, and the story of a drag clown who has severely misinterpreted what the gig they're going to is, there's a surprising amount of overlap with the themes that we look at. And I remember the list, the magazine came and saw both of our shows in the same evening back to back, and they actually mentioned in my review it was stunning programming by the theater that we were at, because of how much those sort of themes overlapped in our shows. So I'm excited to see that. That's one's also at Summer Hall. Another show called Alter, which is a new two-hander from a queer playwright here in Melbourne as well, M. Tambry, that was commissioned recently at Midsummer Festival, which is our queer festival that we have in Melbourne. And again, I didn't get to see it, but I finally get to. That one is also going to be at Underbelly. And then those ones aside, I'm just keen to see some random shit. Like, I'm keen to just finish up my show, scrub my face, and then wander out there. And I want to be flyered for once. I don't want to be the one flyering. I want them to give me their flyers and just be like, yeah, cool, I'm going to come to this tonight. That's great. I'll see you there.
That's really good. Just to let you know, so you say your expectations for this festival, you are going to be flyered. There's no like, this can't be. Like,
it's like, there's no escaping it.
No, sorry. Yeah.
I'll be doing my curtain call. I'll be doing my bows. I'll be like, folks, thank you. If you love the show, go tell people. If you've got your own show, meet me out in the foyer afterwards. Please give me your flyer, because I will be coming along.
That's nice. So that's Ryan, and that's Ryan's story, and that is, the show is called Kinder. And a reminder for those of you who are here during the month of August is at 6:40. It's in the Big Belly, so in the Cowgate at the Underbelly. It's a kind of really interesting conversation that I guess, both in terms of just the mechanics of bringing a show like that to Edinburgh for the first time and the kind of slightly scary levels of cost that are involved and such things, but also a kind of really interesting story that kind of plays with lots of things that audiences might expect about this kind of show and this kind of part of the Fringe Festival program, I think.
For sure. And this is becoming quite a common theme, but that sort of openness to discuss, you know, such very lofty topics of censorship and reactionary politics is really interesting, and to sort of tangle it in that sort of bow of being a personable story, but also, you know, behind that facade of being a sort of drag artist is an interesting sort of dynamic to explore, for sure.
Lots to explore as we go through this series. You can find out more about all tomorrow's festivals on labelsessions.com or various different social media handles. There'll be various new interviews coming out over the next few weeks as we start to identify some of the key trends and key findings as we go through this whole process. But you should also be able to find the details on the show in the show notes as well. So hope to meet you again on one of these episodes soon, and maybe see you at Ryan's show or some of the other shows that we profile as we go through the next few weeks.